welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh. This is episode number 59, and I'm joined by Sondra. Hi, Sondra. How are you?
Hi, Kenny. I'm a little confused because I watched last night's episode of SmackDown, and I don't really know what's going on in the world anymore.
I sent out a tweet that I thought was quite accurate, which was, imagine if the Red Rooster was in a skybox with the WWF Championship watching Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage fight for the right to face him. Wouldn't that be a ludicrous world to live in? That's the world we live in 2017. Just like if in 1989 when that happened, you'd went, imagine if Donald Trump was president. It's all happened.
This is the world. This is the world. This is why I escaped to Chikara, where things make sense. And there's, you know, only people stealing each other's identities and time travel and slow motion and all sorts of things. But like, it totally works in that world, right? I feel safer and more comfortable in that world than I do on SmackDown. What even was Dolph Ziggler doing? I don't understand. It was a terrible episode, but I was just baffled the whole time. So I was sort of intrigued by how baffled I was. I don't know. I don't even know.
There's a lot to talk about. The thing is, there was some really good stuff, and there was some fucking atrocity of decisions. You know what I'm talking about. It's fucking
bullshit. I know what
you're
talking about.
It's ludicrous. It's stupid. But they're deciding to do it because they're fucking idiots.
I got multiple tweets just saying, Kenny's going to be so mad. That's like accurate. Kenny is so mad.
Because Kenny feels like people who are actually over should get the push and make you money and not the people who are not over. Like, whatever happened to gradual pushes? Like, whatever happened to people just like gradually getting up the card? It's like, Aiden English all of a sudden is at the level of being an NXT champion. Is he? Is he though? No, he's not. He's about as over as Izzy, actually. Anyway.
Oh, do not. No. Aiden English is wonderful, but...
Oh, come on. Listen, I know that you like his singing, right? And I know he's one of your weird people that's so shit that you think he's good, and that's fine.
No, this is not a case of he's so shit, I think he's good. I think he is legitimately good.
Well, I mean, we differ on that fact. The problem is whether he's good or not, he should not be beating Sami Zayn clean in quick matches. It shouldn't have happened 5 weeks ago when it happened. It shouldn't have happened last night. And I'll guarantee... Here's why it shouldn't happen. I think what most people do, and judging by people's responses to social media, is people didn't watch that and go, oh my god, I really want to see Sami Zayn get their comeuppance. People just go, oh, SmackDown's just a terrible wrestling show. That's not effective in any way, shape, or form. It's not. So... Stupid decision. It's so shit. But in better news, happy birthday to Braun Strowman, who brings light into my life. It's his birthday today. So I want to say happy birthday.
I'm so glad he was born.
I'm
wearing my Braun Strowman shirt right now, actually.
As you should. And I also want to give the Twitter win of the day to my favorite lady, Nia Jax. Have you seen this yet? It's so good.
No, I haven't really been on Twitter today.
So you know how Emma's delusional?
Mm-hmm.
So Emma tweets Nia Jax saying, you should be thanking me for getting you a match that you don't deserve. This is about me, and at no mercy, I'll be hashtag Emma New Women's Champ. And Nia Jax, with just the best retweet quote I've ever seen, big smiley laugh saying, did you thank Vince for the 6 month vignette push you had but never capitalized on? How much more do you deserve?
Oh.
Nia Jax, I'm drinking attendance and I'm tipping my hat to you.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I'm not going to lie. That's amazing.
Sorry,
and
Michael.
I love Emma. I love Emma so much. And I would love to see Emma as the new women's champion. I would. But that is really funny, actually.
So good. But yeah, so the weird thing about SmackDown is there's a really good roster and a bunch of jobbers who get pushes that shouldn't, like Jinder Mahal and Aiden English and all these other people who nobody really cares about in the real world. It's like...
Okay, so here's the thing about this, though. Is Jinder Mahal really a jobber anymore?
But
he's been champion for over 100 days and he's consistently winning. So I know that you still think of him as a jobber because he was a jobber on Raw. And it was an issue when he became world champion. It was like he was incredibly, like, like, where the fuck did that come from? But at this point, can you really still call him a jobber? You can say he doesn't feel main event. You can say that he doesn't really feel like he should be champion, but they are presenting him like a star and he's consistently winning.
But I don't think anybody's buying it, which is the problem. I've got a new argument now, thanks to Charlie Beckett. Thank God for him. So can I read you what Charlie said?
Sure.
And I think this is a great point, because Charlie's a rugby player, right? So he's coming at it from a sports background, which okay. I think is key here. Here's what he says. This is a bit long, but bear with me, it's worth it. He says, wrestling is fake. We all know this. We all accept it. Matches have a predetermined winner before the first bell rings, and that's fine. That's the way the business works, and anyone doesn't like it, well, to be frank, you're watching the wrong form of sport or entertainment. You see what he did there? Basically talking about sports entertainment. Anyway, however, personally, and I think a lot of people would agree, I like some sort of realism in my wrestling. Let's look at Raw for an example. Lesnar is champion, and that makes sense. He's a legitimate badass fighter with a brutal history of victories in both the WWE ring and a UFC cage. Why wouldn't he be champion? Why wouldn't he be beating everyone? But on the flip side, Braun Strowman has been booked as an unbeatable monster, so maybe he could beat the Beast. It wouldn't be unbelievable if he did. Same as when Brock fought Joe, the way he had been booked and presented, if he had won, it wouldn't be unbelievable or unrealistic. This brings intrigue and genuine interest into the matches on Raw. Then he goes on to say, then we look at SmackDown Live. The way Jinder won the title was the problem. It's so unrealistic. In no other sport would a team or athlete go from being a bottom of the league side to champions in a matter of weeks with no sign of changing their performance on the pitch or in the arena from when they were losing every week to when they became champions. That would be like a side in the second division winning the top English football league in one season, or a side that was 16 down one season from winning the Super Bowl without making any changes to their roster and winning the Super Bowl. It's unrealistic, unbelievable, and therefore no one is interested. I know one-off surprise victories happen in sports, so if Jinder beat Randy Orton at Backlash, had been a one-off shock upset, and then he had lost the title soon after, I could have believed it. This isn't a one-off, though. It's been months, and the lack of realism is really doing my head in. Why should I care about who beats who or who wins a feud going forward on SmackDown when it seems anyone can be champion for as long as they want? I play professional sports for a living, and I know that form is massively important. I wish WWE would treat it that way. Sorry for the rant. I'm just very passionate about SmackDown. It's been my favourite show since I was a kid, and it pains me to see it the way it's going when they have such a talented roster. Which I think is a very interesting way to look at it from a different perspective.
No, it is a very interesting way to look at it. And I think when Jinder became the champion, I didn't expect it to last this long. I don't think anyone did, right? And now it just kind of seems like an inevitability and like it's just continuing for some reason. And I mean, I guess you could say Jinder did change some things about him because he got the Singh brothers, right? And they've been advantageous to him, and maybe working with the Singh brothers has made Jinder a better wrestler. I mean, it hasn't necessarily, but like, you know, if you go in storyline, maybe you can kind of go with that, right? Like having the Singh brothers has given him a new confidence. Having the title has given him new confidence so he can beat these people who are top tier performers. I'm not saying that I love Jinder as champion. I don't, but I still think calling him a jobber at this point is inaccurate.
Well, the reason I still call him a jobber is because I think that's how he feels. Like, I know that you, the thing that you've said, which I do agree with, is they are attempting to present him as a star, right? With the entrance and all that sort of stuff. The problem is I don't buy it because he's not got any better promos. He's not got any better in the ring. So the issue is, you know, we live in an era now where 8 months ago, the same championship was being fought for in front of 70,000 people with AJ Styles and John Cena. And I just... And it's not me. It's not like I don't want to believe, but I don't believe that Jinder Mahal really is the champion, even when he is. I don't believe that he can beat Nakamura, even though he did. I don't believe that he could beat Randy Orton, even though he has multiple times. I don't believe any of it. I think that's kind of. I know Charlie doesn't believe it for a different reason, but to me, he still is the same jobber because there's apart from putting a turban on his head and putting him in a suit and having an Indian dancing around him, and giving him a couple of salsa boys. He's not a better performer than he was, I don't think. And that's the issue. Is like, I think it's like, you can skirt it up and you can dress him up and you can put all these bells and whistles around him, but when you strip all that away, he is the same mediocre performer, I think, that he was before. So to me, that's why I just can't move on from that. And if he was to improve, either on the microphone or in the ring or both, I could live with it, but I just don't think he has. And that's where it just becomes this kind of why are we doing this? You know, what, like, and I read a report, somebody had posted it in the community, or so, the community, as my mum would say, and that he might hold the belt till WrestleMania. I mean, can you imagine?
I mean, it's upsetting.
Because I just think he's it's a horrible way to say it. He's just like a cancer of SmackDown. Like, he's like the worst thing to happen to that show. Because I think the key is that I don't believe that anybody buys it. And I don't believe that MD, like, it's not like people want to see him get beat. They just don't want to watch because of him. And I don't think that's effective. If that makes sense.
No, it's not effective. And I mean, you're not wrong in the sense of like buying him as champion is difficult sometimes, but I guess maybe I need to watch this show. So I'm trying to just not despair about needing to watch this show because I don't have a choice, right?
Like, I don't have a choice either.
I know you don't. But
do you not think that by now I could have got somebody else to come in and co-host this? I would have done it.
I know you would have. I know you would have left me. That's what co-hosts do.
But then you would have phoned and made me stay because you'd have been like, if I have to watch it, you have to watch it, which is not how the world should work. But there you go. That's so, you know, I'm not going to put all this effort into finding somebody for you to then go, I'm not doing it unless you do it. Which, you know, I mean,
you know me too well.
It's basically a Thelma Louise death pact at this point.
Pretty much. But it's just one of those things where I like the presentation of him. I think he's not terrible on the microphone. I don't think he's necessarily super charismatic. I think part of the problem is that he just cuts the same promo all the time, right?
And like, he loses his voice every time.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that doesn't bother me as much as it bothers other people. But if he said different words, I think his delivery is fine. I think that's just the thing with Jinder, is that everything is fine. But I also feel like we have this conversation every single week and I'm really tired of it. And I don't want to be having the same conversation every single week until WrestleMania.
I think the problem is that, like, there's so many good people on the roster and we have to have this fucking shitebag. This absolute shitebag. Oh my god.
It doesn't make sense that this is the main event. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. I feel like I'm being defeated by SmackDown this week. I'm just so tired. I'm so tired of it.
And do you know what's making it better? McMahon's. Making it better. Which is mad, right? You should be like, well, that's
You're so excited. Let's actually start talking about the show instead of just fucking.
Okay, so SmackDown was live from Sioux Falls, South Dakota at the Denny Sanford Premier Center.
You wouldn't know where it was live from because they didn't mention it once on the show.
Yeah, because they don't tell you unless it's a big city.
I'm curious if they're going to mention Grand Rapids when they're here.
I think they do mention Grand Rapids, actually. I think they have before.
I think they do. Because, I mean, they've shown external shots of Van Andel and everything, but I don't know. I'm curious. We'll see.
So we opened the show. Obviously, tonight's main event is going to be Shinsuke Nakamura and Randy Orton fighting, even though they should be fighting at Hell in a Cell for the championship, but they're not because life's unfair. They're fighting for the right to face the shittest WWE champion in years, but we get a really cool kind of backstage thing where they both cut promos about each other, which I thought was a nice twist to the usual format.
It was a cool way to open the show, and it made it feel big, right? Like, they were building to this really big main event.
I liked how, like, Randy Orton's trying to be really broody in this, like, boiler room, and it's like, what are you doing? Like, you're not broody.
Talk about a boring champion, though, right? Like, talk about someone who cuts the same promo all the time, Randy fucking Orton.
I'll tell you this, though. I know you and I disagree on this. I would literally give £1,000 to WWE right now. I'll make the transfer within the hour to put the belt back in Randy Orton. I forgive him because you know what? See, when he was champion, at least people were fucking watching. They might have been a little bit, oh, he's quite safe and stale, whatever. But like, he just didn't kill stories like Jinder does. Like, Orton was kind of like, I'm trying to, right? Okay, here we go. I'm going to take this back. So, Sandra, you've had sex in your life, right?
I have. That's true.
You've had sex with more than one person, right?
Yes.
No, I'm not saying at one time. I'm not going to get into your proclivities. But so, have you ever had just a very generic sex with somebody? Just it was absolutely serviceable and fine, but it didn't rock your boat. It didn't set your world on fire.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So, you know, so I guess after that sex that you had, if I were to be in the next room afterwards and go, so Sandra, would you have a repeat visit to this? What would your answer be?
Well, I guess if I'm not doing anything else.
Okay. So say you came in and you had just, like, awful sex. Like, it's just, like, traumatic. You don't enjoy it. The guy basically shits himself midway through or something. It's just fucking terrible, right? And then you come out and I'm there and I go, so Sandra, would you go there again? What would your answer be?
You know, nope, uh-uh. I'm scarred for life, apparently, after this sexual encounter.
I think that we all know who's who out of Rinder and Jandy, Jinder and Randy, of those two. Randy Orton is the pedestrian sex that you go, I think it was fine, it wasn't great, but like, you know, if I get desperate in the future, I'm fucking desperate now, Randy. Come back.
No, see, you and I just have very different reactions to Randy Orton because I feel like I would be traumatized by another Randy Orton title reign. I hate him so much. He is the worst. And he, at least, like, Jinder's not very interesting right now. Jinder had the chance to be more interesting than Randy Orton. He hasn't done it, but he had the chance to be more interesting. With Randy Orton, I know what I'm getting. It's going to be terrible. Like, he's boring as shit. And he doesn't care, like, ever. So why should I care about him if he's going to put in, like, 2% of the effort?
Have you seen the amount of effort that Jinder's put in? He got given literally, like, the keys. He got given the fucking golden ticket to the chocolate factory, and he didn't even go to the chocolate factory.
Well, I think that's just because Jinder's not very good. I think Jinder's putting in the effort. He's just not very good.
God, see if I hear one more time that him training is effort. My God. I mean, I don't give a fuck how much you train. I don't give a fuck.
No, I'm saying, I think character-wise and stuff, I think he is trying. I just think he's not very good at it.
So Nakamura and Orton do their promos, and this cuts us to... it's only been 16 minutes of gender bashing before we start talking about the show. That's a record for us. Usually it's a good 20, 25.
Yeah, trust me, I know, I'm here every week.
You goad me into it as well. I know you act like you're above it, but you goad me into it every single time because you want to have these little discussions with me, and then when I start discussing it, you're like, oh, Kenny, we can't do this again. Well, you ask for it every single fucking week, and you know you do. So we have James Ellsworth with Carmella. Ellsworth's kind of introducing Carmella, but before he can finish, Kevin Owens comes out. He interrupts. He says, you know, I'm sure what you had to say was really important, but I'm actually the guest referee for this match, and this prompts Shane McMahon to come out. Shane said that, you know, he's going to stop him there, nip this in the bud. He needs to stop blaming, you know, Shane for his lack of success and take responsibility for his losses. Kevin Owens comes back with, you know, you've had everything to do with my losses. You interfered at SummerSlam. You pulled Baron Corbin out of the ring the other week. Everything's to do with you. And then Owens talks about, you know, why do you do all this crazy stuff? Is it because your dad didn't give you enough attention? Is that why, you bring up your kids to do little dances? And Shane's like, don't bring up my kids. Just don't bring up my kids. He said, oh, you know, you jump off cells to be like, you know, look, daddy, like me. I can jump off things. And he's like, you know, you fall off things. You survive helicopter crashes to show your dad that you're a real man. And he said, I think the entire McMahon family would have been better off if you hadn't survived that crash.
I mean, that was cold-blooded.
I loved it.
And then he goes like, you know, your dad, your wife, and your kids, like, them's fighting words. I understand why Shane McMahon got pissed, especially after he's like, don't bring up my kids.
And then Shane just goes into a frenzy. Shane attacks Kevin Owens. Now, the thing about Shane McMahon is I think he's got very good intensity in programs, and I think he's good for the most part. He has the worst punches of any person in wrestling, without question. So I understand that people are like, oh my God, his punches are so bad, because they are. But apart from that, I like the intensity of it. He just goes after Owens. He almost slips, but manages to just tackle Owens over the announce table. Trainers are stepping in. Adam, oh, what's his name? The producer. Bald guy. Adam.
Adam.
It's not Adam Cole. Adam.
Why am I? Pierce?
Adam Pierce, yeah. Adam Pierce. He's there. And then Daniel Bryan's there. Shane almost like steps up to Bryan, but he doesn't. People are chanting, yes. Bryan's standing over Kevin Owens, but like, you can't do this to Shane. Shane goes off. Huge hot segment to start the show. Kevin Owens then meets Daniel Bryan backstage, who apologizes, and Kevin says he's going to sue Shane, the WWE, and the entire McMahon family. when he would own WWE by the time he was through. Brian said, there's got to be another way to fix this, and Kevin said he was right. He said, I'm going to go and press criminal charges and Shane myself. What did you think of this open and the kind of upping of intensity of the Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens program?
This was excellent. This was absolutely excellent. First of all, I love Kevin Owens coming out to interrupt Carmella, because I love when the men's division acknowledges the women's division and makes it feel like a fully formed world. I love that Kevin Owens would want to insert himself as special guest referee between Natalia and Carmella, because that means, oh yeah, the women's matches, they exist on the very same show. You wouldn't know it a lot lately on SmackDown, right? Because they all just sort of seem to not matter, most of the women's matches, because there aren't any stories, and that's frustrating. But it seems like, you know, Kevin Owens wanting to be the special guest referee in another match, I love that they chose the women's match to do it. I think it's a really cool touch. I wanted to see Kevin Owens as the special guest referee in that match, so I was a little bummed that we don't get that. But, you know, I like Kevin Owens basically just trying to goad Shane McMahon into things, right? Because according to, you know, Kevin Owens got pissed when Shane McMahon took the referee shirt from Baron Corbin and became the referee. So he's like, by your own logic, Shane, I can just take a referee shirt and become a referee. So that's what I'm going to try and do. And he's like, Kevin Owens is such a dickhead, right? He's just trying to up the ante and be an absolute arsehole about it. And I love it. And I mean, all of the, this wasn't quite like John Cena, Roman Reigns heated, but the promo was kind of heated, right? Like bringing up Shane's kids, bringing up the fact that he survived a helicopter crash, telling him he shouldn't have survived the helicopter crash. I mean, that's cold blooded. That's like, that's harsh. That's really harsh. Like, you'd be better if, you know, everyone would be better if you were dead, that kind of thing. And then the Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens brawl, I thought was great too. And at this point in the show, I was kind of like, yeah, like, I was a little confused as to why they were upping the intensity right now, because Hell in a Cell isn't until October 8, I believe it is. So it seems like we're still kind of far out to be ramping it up to that degree. So I was like, I mean, they're not going to have Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon be just a TV feud, right? So at this point in the show, I was definitely all in on the intensity of it and all in on the Kevin Shane stuff, because I really liked it. But I don't know. I'm a little more wary given what happens later.
I thought this was great. I thought this was just what I needed, given that we need to put up with the rest of the shit on this show. And the thing is, like, I understand there's some people who don't like Shane McMahon or don't like him being involved, and it's part of a bigger problem that WWE don't really want to make stars the level of guys like Austin and Hogan and stuff before, because they left. Whereas guys like Shane, you know, their family, they're not going to go anywhere again. But Shane, I think Shane played his part really well here, and I think that Kevin Owens is just on fire with this program. I like the infusion of Daniel Bryan. It's given him something to do properly for the first time in a while. So yeah, I thought this opening segment was really good.
Yeah, seeing Bryan come out to have to break it up was really cool. And I mean, knowing that they can't hit Bryan and knowing that he can't do anything, it almost made it kind of like, ooh, what are they going to do here? You know, because you know that Bryan can't get physically involved, even though I'm sure he wants to, but he can't right now. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic.
It then takes us into Carmella comes back for her match. It's against Natalia, obviously. They have a match for about 6 minutes. I mean, it was fine. It never really got into second gear, but it was okay. But in the end, Carmella has a super kick on Natalia after Natalia went for the sharpshooter. Ellsworth is on the apron, but he ends up slipping the briefcase into the ring by mistake. The referee thinks that means that she wants to cash in. She's screaming no, and, you know, throwing the briefcase out. And that allows, and then when she's screaming at Ellsworth, that allows her to roll up Natalia for a victory. And then after
Natalia rolls up Carmella.
Yeah, sorry, Natalia rolls up Carmella, so Natalia gets the win. Afterwards, Carmella addresses James Ellsworth down in the microphone, calls him subhuman and a genetic defect, and his mother should have given him away at birth. They were all about the burns on this show, which, you know,
like, everyone was so mean last night. Like, so mean. And I don't understand, like, your mother should have given you away at birth, like, but then someone else would still have him. Like, I didn't understand it as an insult. But
that's why, like, I would never say it to Jinder's parents, I wish you'd given away at birth, because you still would have probably ended up here to ruin my life.
I mean, he would still be in the world, for sure. can I say, I thought the finish of the match was incredibly awkward. I didn't like it. Like, I get what they were trying to do, but it seemed like Carmella had to stand there and yell and just stall for so long before Natalia did kind of a terrible roll up. Like, it wasn't very good. And I don't like the distraction roll up, and I don't like how often the distraction roll up is used. So that kind of frustrated me. Like, I would have liked, I don't know, Natalia getting Carmella in the sharpshooter, or the roll up being a little bit more believable. I would have liked better than just Carmella standing there going, James, what are you doing? James, what are you doing? I'm going to just stand here. And then standing there for way too long. I don't know. I didn't like it.
I like to have seen Becky Lynch or Charlotte involved in something. That's what I
yeah,
like.
That would have been nice too.
Up next.
But the whole Carmella James Ellsworth dissension thing.
Should we talk about it when it gets to the second bit of it? And we'll just kind of cover it in the backstage and just do it as a one. Because we're gonna end up talking about it for ages twice.
Okay, fine.
Up next, Aiden English is singing in the ring. Sami Zayn interrupts him. Aiden English.
I've never been more conflicted because I love Aiden singing, but also I love Sami Zayn's song.
Aiden English beats Sami Zayn with a roll up in 1 minute and 48 seconds. Aiden then tries to finish singing. Sami Zayn chases him away. Let me just paint a picture for you, everybody. The man who is a former NXT champion, the man who gave Nakamura his best WWE match to date, the man who has raised money for Syria, the man who people, I think he's like the number 4 or 5 t-shirt merch seller on SmackDown, was beaten by a former vaudevillain who gets little reaction most of the time he's around. And for all effects, is a prelim guy, and he's now beaten Sami Zayn twice.
Three times.
Clean. He's beaten twice clean.
Yes.
And it's appalling. It's just horrible. I do not blame David J. McCutcheon for not watching this show. Why would you? Why would... If people turned off after this, I would not blame them. What an absolute fucking abortion of a decision. Again. Fuck's sake.
I'm not really going to defend it this week.
Sami Zayn? Sami fucking Zayn?
I know, and he's one of my very favorite wrestlers, and I have no idea what they're doing. Now, I love Aiden English, okay? Like, I love Aiden English so much, more than most people in the world love Aiden English, right?
Fair.
This doesn't really make any sense, though. Like, the first time it happened and you were raging, I was like, but it's just, it's, you know, it's just kind of a fluke win and it's fine and it doesn't, like, it's fine, right? And then the second time he beat Sami Zayn was because of Kevin Owens' pop-up powerbomb. That was fine. It was more part of an angle between Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon and Sami Zayn and all that kind of stuff, right? Like, that was fine. This is just a repeat of the first fluke victory. And I don't know if it's supposed to just be like Sami Zayn is a loser, so he has to come back and triumph over Aiden English or something. I don't understand what they're doing, basically. Like, it, and they just keep fighting each other over and over and over, which is another one of my things that I don't like when wrestling shows do, is just have the same opponents fight over and over and over for no reason. Like, why are they still fighting? I don't know. I think Sami Zayn versus Aiden English could be actually a really compelling feud, but the way to build a really compelling feud is not have one guy just beat the other guy a bunch. Especially if one of the guys seems like he should be able to beat the other one and then can't for some reason. Like,
do you know why it bothers me so much?
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
It bothers me because it reminds me of the gender thing so much. On a lesser scale, but it's watching someone beat a top... I mean, maybe I just see Sammy as a top guy and other people don't. I don't know. But, like, I feel like I'm just watching a jobber beat a top guy. I don't believe it. And then I'm being fed it again and again. And I still don't believe it. And actually what's happened at the end is I still don't believe the guy that's getting all the wins. And I now don't care as much about the guy that's lost all the matches. So I feel you've actually kind of broken two characters rather than, you know, helped two. Because, like, is there anything more tragic than seeing Sami Zayn chase after Aiden English after being beat by him? I mean, it's just tragic.
I don't know if it's...
To be fair to you, right? Although I just, you know, Aiden English was fine to me before. He was kind of inoffensive. He's offensive to me now. But even if you like Aiden English, the way for Aiden English to be featured and get a push is for it to be gradual and for him to get up the card and grow. This isn't him growing. This is just like they've chucked him 10 spots up the card with no real reason for people to buy into it and expecting people to buy into it. That's where I think the issue is.
Well, that's where I think we agree on it, because it just sort of feels like it's jarring, right? And having something be jarring once, having him get a fluke victory over Sami Zayn once, and having that be kind of like, oh, well, that's interesting. Get him in our consciousness. I don't have a problem with that. You did. I didn't. But having it happen again, just on repeat, it seems like it doesn't fit. It doesn't feel organic. It doesn't feel natural. It doesn't feel like it's telling a story necessarily. I mean, I guess seeing Sami Zayn chase after Aiden English made sense, because like at least Sami Zayn was upset that he lost, but I just don't really know what they're doing. I mean, I won't lie, hearing Aiden try to sing again after the match, getting to hear his music again was cool. Like, and then as Sami's chasing him, hearing him like sing his pleas of like, no, don't chase me, and like he's doing it in song, I loved that. I loved all of that, because of course I did, because I love Aiden English, right? But like, this really doesn't make any sense, and I can't defend it. I don't know what they're doing. I wish that they were telling a story with it. I wish that there were some sort of compelling story other than these guys fight over and over and over, and now Aiden English just is getting wins. I think if there were more of an organic progression, I think if Aiden English had a lower card feud, and I mean, the weird thing is they're not presenting it like Sami Zayn is on the level of like Aiden English or Ty Dillinger, which, you know, breaks my heart that Ty Dillinger isn't on a higher level, but he's not right now. Like, I still feel like they're presenting Sami Zayn as a big deal. I still feel like if Sami Zayn were to get involved in the main event scene, I would still believe it, because he's Sami Zayn, right?
I don't think Sami Zayn gets anywhere near the reaction he used to.
No, he doesn't. Like, and I remember in Chicago, actually, like, there were some people booing Sami Zayn, and people shouldn't be booing Sami Zayn.
I would like for Sami Zayn to be traded back to Raw in the Superstar Shakeup, please. Bring him back.
I would like for there not to be another Superstar Shakeup anytime soon.
I just want Sami Zayn off this show. Just get him away. Get him, like, fix him. Take him away.
Isn't it baffling that we wanted Sami Zayn on SmackDown so badly because SmackDown had the better story and SmackDown had the better characters and SmackDown knew how to treat its performers and SmackDown made everyone look like a star? And then WrestleMania happened and everything just went to shit. Randy Orton became champion, killed SmackDown.
No, the killer of SmackDown is gender. If you go back...
SmackDown was bad before gender. SmackDown was bad before gender.
It was bad before gender, but it wasn't killed before gender. Because if you look back at it, even when the shakeup happened, people were excited about, oh, Sami Zayn's on SmackDown. The New Day are going to be on SmackDown. Rusev's going to be on SmackDown. Charlotte's on SmackDown. Like, there was excitement there about what was going to happen. And then there was that weird month where like Orton had to fight in a Raw pay-per-view. And then it's funny, I was talking to my friend Jamie the other night, and he was talking about, do you remember how gender got the chance to fight Randy Orton at Backlash?
It was a 5-way, right?
Yeah, and it's funny because Jamie was saying that he remembers when gender qualified. And he was like, oh, maybe they're just like putting him in there to be like, you know, anybody can win. And I remember, yep. I remember laughing at him. Worst mistake I've ever made. Which is now why when anyone says, oh, that'll never happen, I just go, no, don't think that way. Because then you'll be as disappointed as I was. And you know, the thing with Orton, personal feelings aside, you look at the main event, Orton's so over, and Orton's so popular, and he draws people in. And the only evidence I've seen of the gender thing has been that it's taking people away. It's also not helped that SmackDown lost John Cena, either, because he was a big ratings draw for them, so... but, you know, hopefully it'll get better. So we move on to a backstage segment where Daniel Bryan's approached by the New Day and the Usos. We find out next week that SmackDown is going to be in Las Vegas. Did you know that Las Vegas is also nicknamed Sin City, Sandra?
You know, if I didn't know it before, Kenny, I certainly knew it after this episode of SmackDown, because, oh boy, did they hammer it home. So Sin City SmackDown, Kenny! Sin City SmackDown is coming next week. Did you know that Sin City SmackDown is coming next week? Did you know that they will be in Las Vegas for Sin City SmackDown?
I'm not going to lie, I do love a Las Vegas show, so I'm cool with it.
I like it if it's not, like, the roulette.
Oh, I want the roulette again. Bring the roulette back. a roulette match. Whoever loses never wrestles again. Jinder versus Aiden English. No, because then Aiden will lose and I'll be worse.
Yeah, don't wish that on my Aiden.
No, maybe like Jinder versus like... Can he just fight himself?
Is
that possible? So like he has to lose? So anyway, we're going to get a street fight next week with the New Day and the Usos, which will be a lot of fun. The New Day are randomly wearing boxer shorts, which nobody talked about, and I'm not sure why.
I don't know.
They were wearing boxer shorts.
Yeah, they definitely were, now that you mention it. I sort of forgot about it, but yeah, because they're the New Day, because why wouldn't they be wearing boxer shorts?
Why not? So anyway, so then the phone goes, and Daniel Bryan has to take it, and the person on the other end says that he has to take care of something in the ring right now. I think we all knew who he was talking to.
Well, I mean, when he's like, yes, sir.
Yeah, so he's talking to the chairman of the board, who very rarely gets involved in the day-to-day running. That's the thing that, like, I know some people go, oh, you know, there's too much authority stuff, but, like, what's good about it is very rarely does Vince get involved in what the commissioners and the general managers do. So when he does get involved, it feels like a bigger deal than it normally would. So Daniel Bryan gets a phone call from Vince. He has to go do something in the ring right now. Daniel Bryan comes out, no music.
Did it strike you when Daniel Bryan was, like, in the ring? Okay, that WWE was just trolling Daniel Bryan.
I did not. Okay, I get it now. I mean, the thing is, I wish that I could tell you. I wish I could say more stuff, but, like, the whole situation with him is so interesting. And it's going to get more interesting in the next 12 months. It really is. There's so many pieces at play of his story, his future, so it'll be interesting. Anyway, Daniel Bryan comes out to no music. He calls Shane McMahon down. It was a nice touch for Daniel Bryan not to commit to his music, because it's not a celebratory sort of like, yay, let's do a yes move thing.
Yeah, because if you hear Daniel Bryan's music, you're going to do the yes chance and be all excited to hear Daniel Bryan's music, right? Because that's the reaction, because Daniel Bryan is a delight and a joy to us.
Exactly. So Daniel Bryan comes out. Shane McMahon, he calls it Shane McMahon, and he asks him, what were you thinking? You know, do you remember last year when The Miz tormented me and talking smack about never wrestling again after I retired? You know, do you know how many times I wanted to say screw this job and screw the WWE and headbutt him in the face and defend myself? Which I thought was just a brilliant point to bring up from Daniel Bryan. He finally gets to talk about what he wanted to do to The Miz that he couldn't do.
And I like the fact that he said headbutt and not just punch him. Because headbutt seemed really defiant, right? Because we all know why Daniel Bryan had to retire. So for him to say headbutt specifically, it just kind of felt like he really wanted to just say screw WWE, screw all of this. I loved it.
And I think bringing that into the story is great. So he says, you know, but I didn't do it because you told me that I had to put the company first, my family first, the employees, the roster of SmackDown before anything to do with me. And Shane said, look, I take responsibility for my actions. I know I put you in a tough spot. And Bryan said, you know, it's not just the WWE and your family that's in a tough legal position, but you've put the risks of all the superstars and their families, because they depend on SmackDown Live and the shows going ahead and all that sort of stuff. And Shane said, look, you know, when people mention my kids, I go into a blind rage. And he said, you know, put the shoe on the other foot. You know, you're now a new dad. And then Bryan said, you know, you've got no right to throw that in my face. And Shane said, look, I'll talk to Kevin Owens. I'll smooth it over. And Bryan said, look, it's too late. I just talked to Vince. And effective immediately, you're indefinitely suspended. And he apologized and left. And Shane was left sort of reeling that it's happened. And the fans completely bought into it. They completely bought into Shane's story and the fact that he's, you know, he had to defend the honor of his kids, but Vince had to do what he did because Kevin Owens is threatening lawsuits everywhere, so he has to be seen to be doing something, and the fans are chanting, thank you, Shane, and he's leaving, and a very, very, very interesting segment. Tell me what you think, break it down.
So, I know that you're really excited about McMahon family drama. I am less excited about McMahon family drama. I'm wary of McMahon family drama. I think this segment just brought me back to, was it 2012 when Suit with Ponytail Triple H had to go, Vince, I'm sorry. You are relieved of your duties. Vince.
The duties, which sounded like duties. The duties. Not the duties.
Yeah. Which your makes duties. Me giggle because I'm 12. But I was getting flashbacks to that segment, and I remember how poorly things went after that segment. And you know who's slated to return to SmackDown Live is Mr. H's himself. And so I don't know. Like, this, the whole logic of it is compelling. I do have to wonder why Stephanie McMahon can assault her employees and Shane McMahon can't. Because she's slapping everybody all the time.
But the difference is the reason that Vince had to do what he did was because Kevin Owens is threatening legal action against the whole McMahon family, against the company. Like, he's going all out saying he wants to bring WWE down for this.
I know, and especially I think because it was such a brawl and because Kevin looked beat up after, right? Like, when they talked to him backstage, he was, like, holding his neck and, you know, like, he got beaten up. It wasn't just a slap. But still, I kind of feel like more people should call Stephanie out on it and be like, no, I'm going to sue you for putting your hands on an employee, right?
Almost like when Brie Bella got arrested in 2014.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good time. But yeah, so, I mean, authority storylines like this are just never my favorite thing. It's one of those situations where, like, I mean, we're going to be getting into Mr. McMahon stuff on Retro Raw, and I don't know how I'm going to feel about it, and I might not be very popular if I don't like it, right? And I feel like everyone seems really, really into this, like with Shane getting suspended. I like Shane as a commissioner because he doesn't get super involved a lot, and I was really kind of into the Kevin Owens Shane McMahon drama, you know, kind of despite myself, but having Vince get involved in it, it does feel big. It does feel big for sure. And it could be good, but I'm wary because I don't want, like, SmackDown needs better storytelling and SmackDown needs better characters. And, well, it needs to use the talent that they have better, right? And giving people less TV time so that we can have some sort of top heavy authority angle on SmackDown. I just really don't want it to become the McMahon show. I just really don't. So this segment, even though it logically made sense and even though it was well performed, I thought Daniel Bryan did a good job. I thought Shane did a good job. I think Shane saying that he's going to go talk to Kevin Owens is the worst idea, because if someone's threatening to sue you, you know, like, maybe going and talking to them isn't going to go well. But Kevin Owens could just use that in his favor to, you know, bolster charges or whatever, right? Like, he could just goad Shane McMahon again. But I don't know. So it left me a little flatter than I wanted it to, just because I just have this overwhelming sense of dread that it's just going to become McMahon family drama central. And I hope that it's compelling and I hope it's good, but I would rather just see Luke Harper in a story.
I thought this was excellent. I really enjoyed it. I thought that it was at least a reason for me to enjoy this episode. I think the McMahon family stuff in the past has proven that it can be really good and it can be really bad, depending on how they do it and who's featured. I think the thing for me is that what's coming out of this is Kevin Owens getting a huge story and Kevin Owens being involved in something big. So I don't really see it as just a McMahon thing. I think that this was logically what it had to probably go. Like, I think if it had just been another, you know, they have a match, it wouldn't really feel that big. But the fact that, you know, Owens goaded Shane into attacking him, and then Owens is threatening to sue the company to get him back, so Vince has to suspend Shane, and Brian's involved, and, you know, Vince is coming back. I think it's all really clever, and it's good. You know, SmackDown is a show that is struggling with ratings, and the fact that its top champion's a jobber. So having Daniel Bryan involved in something, bringing Vince back for an episode, is good, I think, for Maybe you could say it's best for business.
Oh, Sandra. Gosh. I hated this stuff in 2012 so much that
but in 2012,
it's really
it
difficult for me to enjoy it.
It
now.
Wasn't done very well in 2012. That was the problem. Like, that's,
no, it was terrible.
The issue was that it was bad, you know, because that's the problem. You know, I think Vince is not going to be a regular TV character. So it's not like he's coming back and he's going to be on TV for the next 9 months. Like, he's just not. It's just not, you know, the longest Vince has been on TV in the last 4 years is like 3 weeks or a month.
Yeah.
So I really think I think it makes sense that he turns up, because Vince is coming to SmackDown to deal with this problem that's escalated out with the control of Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon. So he has to come and sort it. And I think it makes sense. I think it's good.
I really did like Daniel Bryan bringing up the Miz situation. That was probably my favorite part of it. It made me really miss the Miz on SmackDown, if I'm honest. But I think the logic of that and bringing up Talking Smack, and, you know, remember when Talking Smack was an asset to SmackDown? Strange that.
And do you know what else? I think it's one of the only stories that, like, people genuinely are feeling hatred towards Kevin Owens as a character, and they're feeling love towards the babyface character, which I think is what you want in wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kevin Owens is being a cold-hearted dickhead. I don't feel sympathy for Kevin Owens in this situation, nor should I. So, I mean, I love Kevin Owens as a performer, but when he's telling Shane McMahon, like, your family would be better off if you hadn't survived your helicopter crash, and he's causing all these problems, and, like, he's taking away, like, I don't like Shane McMahon as much as a lot of people like Shane McMahon, but, I mean, Shane's generally a pretty beloved commissioner, right? And so now Kevin Owens is causing that to get all fucked up. I mean, boo that guy.
And I mean, the thing is, you know, you're right, it could go down the 2012 route, which was really bad, or it could go down, you know, other routes, but it could be good. So I'm willing to be open about it, because I think the story so far, it's like I'm reading a book, and I'm reading the book and I'm enjoying everything that I'm reading. So I've got no reason right now to be like, I'm not going to enjoy the next part. So I'm into it. Hopefully it's good. I'm intrigued to see what they do next week with Vince and Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens and Vince, like, they've never interacted as far as I'm aware. So that'll be good.
I don't remember it happening. It's always been Kevin Owens and Triple H, so...
So, there's a lot of interesting elements because, you know, Kevin Owens always talks up Stephanie and Triple H, and he hates Shane, and what's Vince going to... Is Vince going to be a kind of babyface who's trying to, like, you know, calm the situation with Kevin Owens, or is he going to be, like, a heel who's going to come in and try and agree with Kevin Owens and say, you know, you're right, I had to get rid of Shane? Like, there are different ways it could go. There's also the history of Daniel Bryan and Vince, which is there. So, yeah, like I said, it could be good, it could be bad, but I enjoyed the segment. I thought it was good. It was definitely my favourite part of the show, the whole Shane Kevin Owens story, the whole thread that they had. I like when shows have, like, a thread where it's not just a one segment.
Yeah, it was a very good thread.
And even at the end,
I wish I were more excited about it.
That's something you know you don't need to be. If you're not excited about it, you're not excited about it. But, like, you know, even at the end, what I liked was, you know, Kevin Owens is leaving at the end, and Brian comes up to him, and Owens is like, oh, yeah, we're just getting started here. You know, next week this is gonna be my personal playground and your nightmare. And Brian said, well, someone's gonna be here next week to address the controversy. And Owens is like, oh, is Shane's wife mad? And he's like, no, Mr. McMahon will be here next week. And you can see Owen's just been like, oh, fuck. Which is, like, exactly what you would have, you know, if, like, oh, yeah. No, the fucking boss is coming. And, I hope that Vince has complete flappy arms next week and is really over the top. That's my hope.
Bryan did call him Mr. McMahon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's always very intentional. He didn't say Vince. He said Mr. McMahon.
And, I mean, wouldn't it be great if Kevin Owens pop-up powerbombed Vince? That'd be, like, the best. But we'll see. So, I think what's good about this story, compared to other things, like maybe the Aiden thing or the gender thing, is that I think that the majority of people, or what seems to be the reaction of social media anyway, is people are intrigued. Whether it's trepidatiously intrigued or very intrigued or whatever, like, people are interested in the storyline. So I guess they've got next week to follow up.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you're right in the sense of it does give Kevin Owens a really big storyline as well, which I like to see because Kevin Owens needs a very big storyline because he absolutely deserves it. I mean, look at his performance in this episode. He's excellent on the mic and he can put on really good matches too. So I'm glad that he's getting the spotlight for sure.
Renee interviewed Jinder Mahal backstage. I fast forwarded it. What did I miss?
Not much. He represents... Remember last week when I said, oh, he's representing Asia, the story is going to be he represents Asia better than Shinsuke Nakamura, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said that. He said that he represents the continent of Asia better than Shinsuke Nakamura ever could. He represents the greatest nation, India, etc., etc. He speaks Punjabi for a minute. It was kind of the same old, but I don't think it was bad. I don't think his delivery is bad at all. It's just kind of the same thing.
AJ Styles is on commentary up next. We get Baron Corbin versus Ty Dillinger, obviously because Baron attacked Ty last week. The match goes about 10 minutes. Ty gets a decent amount of offense then. I thought the match was actually quite good. And in the end, Baron Corbin kind of gets the cheap shot in to the throat of Ty while the ref's separating them, and then he drops Ty Dillinger in the ring post, hits End of Days and gets the win. And he sort of like smirks at AJ Styles after the match. And then backstage, AJ Styles says that next week, he goes up to Ty Dillinger and said, next week there's the US Open Challenge. It's only open to one guy, and that's you. And Ty shakes his hand and says, phenomenal. What did you think of the match and the direction they're going?
I liked the match just fine. I liked having AJ Styles in commentary. You could tell Baron Corbin and AJ Styles were kind of like shit-talking each other the whole time because big Vance Corbin, right? Like, he's always trying to goad AJ Styles, and AJ Styles is just calling him a cheap shot artist the whole time. And he says it to Ty Dillinger backstage too, so I guess that's what they're going with Baron Corbin as just like a cheap shot artist who, you know, doesn't win clean and doesn't care, because of course he wouldn't. Like, if he's going to win matches, Baron Corbin's going to do what he has to do. So yeah, I mean, I liked this, and I like that Ty Dillinger is getting another chance at AJ Styles. I think that makes AJ Styles look valiant as a champion who wants to defend against a worthy contender, or who he sees as a worthy contender, right? And I think it does good things for Ty Dillinger, because I liked the match that he had with Baron Corbin, and if he can put on a killer match with AJ Styles like I wanted him to last week, then at least he's getting a little bit of a spotlight. I mean, who knows if it's going to actually go anywhere, but at least we'll get a good match out of it. It did strike me at this point, a lot of the stuff on this show just kind of seemed like stuff we had to get through to get to next week's show, which they're promoting as something really big, right? Because Sin City SmackDown, it's going to be a really big show. And it just kind of seems like this week felt like stuff happened this week for sure, but it almost just makes me more intrigued for next week, and this episode wasn't necessarily very great, so I don't know. But the logic of it makes sense, having Baron Corbin and Ty Dillinger face off, and I liked it. Like, it's a good, fun little story, and I like that there are multiple performers vying for the US title.
Yeah, it was good to see Ty getting a little rub there. That was good. Not like a sex rub, but like, you know. Anyway, he had a match. It was good. So next week we get AJ and Ty Dillinger. Hopefully it'll be pretty decent. We have James Ellsworth backstage begging for forgiveness from Carmella after the Bobby Roode video package. He wasn't on the show this week. And Ellsworth begging for forgiveness from Carmella, and then Carmella says, from now on we'll do things my way. She then kissed him and slapped him, and I was very confused as to why she did that. And I guess they're still together, so what was the whole point of earlier?
See, that's the thing, because we didn't really talk about what happened earlier either, that Carmella, you know, basically just because James Ellsworth almost accidentally cashed in for her, she was like, you're subhuman and you're a terrible person and you're not even a human and all this stuff, right? Like, she was being super mean to him, and the dissension kind of came out of nowhere. I think they've teased dissension. I want to say like he cost her a match last week or 2 weeks ago or something as well. It all blends together because there's not a very good story in the women's division on SmackDown right now. But I feel like they started to tease dissension a little bit, but it just came out of nowhere that she was so mean to him, right? When she was the one who, what, like a month ago was wearing the free Ellsworth t-shirt and wanting him to come back to help her out on SmackDown, right? And so it seems like ever since he's come back, he's almost been more of a liability than a help to her. And so I guess that caused all the drama. But then at the end, like, the second segment was where I was just really confused as to what the point of all of this is, because, you know, she like makes out with him and then slaps him, and it's like, does she just want to control him? Like, that's always been their dynamic, as her being in control of him anyway. So I don't know what this changes, other than just Carmella is supposed to look like a big dickhead. But James, it would work better if James Ellsworth were still a sympathetic character, but everybody fucking hates James Ellsworth now, right? Like, when Carmella was dressing him down and saying that, you know, getting really angry at him and dumping his ass, basically, the crowd was chanting na 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 hey 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 goodbye to James Ellsworth, because they're all like, fuck you, James Ellsworth, you're terrible. And that's what's worked so well about Ellsworth, is he's getting Carmella heat, right? Because nobody likes him. So I don't know if making James Ellsworth seem like a sympathetic character is really in their best interest, because I just don't think he is sympathetic at this point.
Yeah, I just didn't really understand. Like, the first segment was fine. I kind of was like, oh, well, you know, they just move. Like, it does make sense that eventually Carmella's going to be like, I've used you and I've got what I wanted, and now you're being inefficient, so I'm going to get rid of you. But that kind of made sense. And then part of me was kind of like, Is James Ellsworth kind of coming up in a one-year contract? Maybe they're just not going to re-sign him? Or maybe that's what
Well, Carmella did say in her promo when she was dumbing him, she's like, how do you even work here? How are you still employed? And it's like...
Yeah, so I thought maybe that's what was happening. I thought maybe, like, his contract's up and this is the way to write him off. And I kind of thought, well, you know, he's been good and good to go out in a high or whatever. And then they do the segment later and I'm kind of like, why did she kiss him? I don't know how much she kissed him. She called him a human defect earlier.
This is the first time we've really seen any physical interaction between the two of them, right? It's always been Ellsworth sort of like hanging on Carmella and her using him and just saying that they're pals or whatever. Like, I think this is the first time we've ever seen any like actual like kissing or anything.
I didn't get the vibe that she likes him. So I don't really
know
why she
doesn't.
Did.
She just wants to control him.
Yeah, the second segment didn't really work for me. The first one did. The second one didn't. Like, when she dumped him, I was kind of like, I get it. I mean, the execution was flawed of him, you know, him dropping the briefcase. I don't really know why you would think that meant she was cashing in. That didn't really make sense. But I thought that her promo on him was pretty good. But then, yeah, the second one just kind of, I thought, undone what the first one did. So,
like, the first one seemed anticlimactic because it was just like, oh, now they're not together, I guess. Like, what do you do with James Ellsworth after that? But then the second one just... I don't know. Maybe it's just supposed to make Carmella look like even more of a dickhead, which I guess it does, but it was more confusing than anything else.
Yeah, it just confused me, really. Main event time, we get Randy Orton versus Nakamura for the right to face gender at Hell in a Cell. They have about a 15-minute match. I thought it was really good, actually. I really enjoyed it. I thought they worked well together. There was some good near falls. The fans were interestingly more into Orton than they were in Nakamura, which I thought was quite intriguing. But I guess that's just depending where the country you go. You're sometimes going to get one babyface that's liked more than the other. And that's kind of the danger of when you do babyface versus babyface matches, that you're going to get this. Orton pulled out the draping DDT. It goes to the RKO. Nakamura had a great reversal of the RKO and pulled Orton's arm out into an armbar.
That was when I yelled at my TV, rip his arm off, rip his arm off. He has shoulder problems. I really didn't want Orton to win.
And Orton used his power to do like an improvised powerbomb, went for another RKO, but Nakamura pulled him into a backstabber, hit the Kinshasa, 1-2-3, Shinsuke Nakamura is going to Hell in a Cell to lose to Jinder again, and I really enjoyed the match. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I thought the match was good. I mean, you kind of went through the whole thing. Randy and Shinsuke Nakamura worked well together. It seemed like Randy gave a couple fucks, which was nice to see. It felt like a big match, the way they were promoting it and everything. It wasn't the main thread of the show, because that was more the Kevin Owens, Shane McMahon storyline. But I like that it felt big. And yeah, I enjoyed it for sure. And the right man won, because, oh my good God, if I would have had to see Jinder Mahal versus Randy Orton again, I don't know if I could handle it. I just, no. So I'm glad that it's going to be Shinsuke Nakamura. I really hope he doesn't lose to Jinder, but I know it's probably going to happen. I hope they change their mind.
Don't go into this with hope. That's the worst thing you can do. Because then you're going to be disappointed. Like, go into it with the expectation of what they're going to do, and then if for some mad reason they come to their senses, then you'll be surprised.
Then it'll be even more exciting. Yeah, no, that's probably the best way to go about it. Just SmackDown's main event scene is broken. That's just the way it is.
The bigger issue, actually, it doesn't even bother me that Jinder's the champion as much as it bothers me that we have to have so many good people fighting for the right to face him. You know? Like, that's the biggest bother, is like, Nakamura versus Cena, Nakamura versus Orton. These big matches that you could literally sell $200 seats to people to buy to see. With the right to face fucking shit stain. Jesus Christ.
I mean, I'm glad people are vying for the title. That's a good thing. Multiple people want the title. That
God
should make
bless
the title
you.
Seem important.
God bless you, Sandra, for trying to find something positive. It's difficult. I hated...
We didn't talk about Dolph Ziggler.
Oh, God, sorry. Yeah, I missed that one out by mistake. I was going to talk about it. Dolph Ziggler decides to come out for his re-debut and he just comes out and impersonates John Cena. I thought the John Cena one was very funny. I did laugh at the John Cena one, especially when he did the jumpy up and down thing. I'll be honest, I thought Ziggler was quite funny here. Like, I know that people are shitting all over it. And it's not like it's like, oh, I want to see this every week. But as a one-off, it did make me laugh. The horrible Macho Man impression. The Naomi one was funny.
He even had a lady.
He did. He had a Miss Elizabeth. I thought it was funny. So, fair play. It's the most interesting thing he's done in a long time for me.
I was just baffled as to what it was supposed to be, right? Because Dolph Ziggler, for a couple weeks now, has been making me zone out and cutting promos about how he's going to re-debut and, like, you know, shitting on other people's gimmicks, right? Like, he keeps using the word gimmick because he's being all edgy and insider, I guess. I realize that I am 100% biased against Dolph Ziggler because I do not like him, so whatever. But I was like, okay, so he's going to re-debut and he's just going to be Dolph Ziggler, isn't he? And then he was. And then he, you know, like the impersonations and stuff, they were kind of car crash in a way. Like, I can't decide if it was so bad it was good or if it was just bad. But I don't know. I felt like I had taken drugs or something and wasn't sure what was happening because it went on for a long time.
It like, did go on for a while.
It went on for a really long time. And when he did the John Cena thing, I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of funny, you know. And then he did the Macho Man one, and I was like, okay, are you done now? And then he did the Naomi one, and it just, like, and he couldn't do the sliding thing, you know, how she, like, slides on her knees and everything. Like, he just dropped down to his knees and, like, walked on his knees. I was like, what are you even doing right now? It just... it didn't end. And then he, you know, cuts a promo about how anybody could do what he did. And, but like, you didn't do it very well. So I just, what even Dolph Ziggler, like, this did not make Dolph Ziggler more interesting to me. It really didn't. Like, he's just still Dolph Ziggler complaining about his spot on the card or complaining about how other people are getting opportunities ahead of him. You know why they're getting opportunities ahead of you? 'Cause you suck. Like, you're not interesting. You are so stale. You, like, he needs a re-debut is what he needs. And he needs to re-debut in another company away from my TV. And that would be helpful.
Yeah, if he could take Bray Wyatt with him, that'd be good. Two of them can go away.
But then if Bray Wyatt can come back. You're not entirely wrong, but.
I did love at the beginning when he came out. I thought, has he actually just re-debuted as the same thing? Like, is he just going to come out and do the exact same thing? Oh, for fuck's sake.
Would you put it past Dolph Ziggler to actually do that? Because I wouldn't. And that is essentially what he did, though, Kenny. Like, he basically just came back and was still Dolph Ziggler complaining about everything.
He was.
At least he's clocked that no one cares. Because he's sitting there telling the crowd, like, you don't care about me? And I'm like, yeah, no, accurate. You are correct. Go away, please.
Very, very accurate. I think that overall... I mean, I hate the gender stuff, as everybody knows, every fucking week that we talk about it. And I thought Aiden English beating Sami Zayn was pathetic, but I still have to give this show a thumbs up because of the Shane Kevin Owens thing was so good, and the Nakamura Orton match was really good that I don't really think I can give a show with those two things that took up about a quarter of the show a thumbs down or middle.
See, for me, it's a thumbs in the middle. I think just because I'm not as invested in the Authority storyline stuff as you are, and I mean, I didn't like Aiden English beating Sami Zayn. I didn't mind. I mean, it's not going to anger me as much as it's going to anger you. I like seeing Aiden English doing things, so that makes me happy. But I think I was so baffled by this show. It was just weird. Like, I felt like we were in the Twilight Zone or something. And I don't know. Like, I don't know what was happening. So I just kind of came away from it going, what did I just watch? And why did I turn off Chikara?
Yeah, I mean, so, if you're not into the Shane Owens stuff as much, it's probably not going to float your boat as much. But next week's going to be a big show. We've got three title matches. We've got New Day and the Usos in a street fight, Naomi and Natalya, and AJ Styles and Ty Dillinger. We've got Vince back to confront Kevin Owens. So it should be an interesting show.
Should be a big show. I'll be very curious to see if, like, all of the promotion that they're doing for the Vegas show does help ratings. I hope it does.
Well, I think the funny thing is, whenever ratings go down a little bit, they always bring Vince back.
And I hate that it works because then they keep doing it.
But he's effective sometimes. It's just if they do it well. But anyway, I'm gonna head off now and head off into the podcast sunset. I'm not dying, but because you have a rule.
You better not. I have a rule about that.
I know
that.
You do. I mean, what are you gonna do if it happens? I mean, what are you gonna do? Come to Scotland to just bash my casket?
Maybe.
If I die, I want to have like a gold dust casket that's like gold and says gold dust on it. Just for shits and giggles, because I don't think anybody can cry at that. They just laugh.
I mean, that's officially been committed to audio, so if you do die, which you're not allowed to do, but if you do, then, I mean, it has to happen now, right? Like, this is basically your last will and testament.
Indeed. Indeed. So I'm gonna go while people in my house cook food and bang things into the ground, which you can probably hear in the podcast. But it's fine, there's a new office tomorrow, so you won't hear it as much then. Thanks for listening, everybody. Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And if you want to hear us talk about, you know, pay-per-view reviews that aren't the big four, we'll be reviewing Hell in a Cell in October. Kenny and David will be recording No Mercy after, what, September 24, I think that one is?
Indeed.
So all of those things are on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes.
We'll be back soon on Patreon with more Mae Young stuff. We'll have a Friday night's main event bonus one up tomorrow. We'll have Ground Zero coming up and much, much more. Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy your week. Bye.
Bye.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money.
Kid on the block, hold on your bets, here's where the buck stops. See, first of all, I'm stepping out on my own. About time I elevated to claim my own throne. Success in my blood, call it homegrown. Puerto Rican testosterone. Power and money got me crazy cocky. No longer need you, poppy. I know you're mad because you can't stop me. And if you wonder how this player done scooped your honey, I think she smell my cologne, it's called brand new money. Making major moves, man, ain't a damn thing funny. Pimpin' hood rats to Playboy bunnies. They see the...
Money, money, money.